Welcome back to EcoTalk, a collaborative discussion about Southern New England's environmental justice issues and the related economic, human, and ecological impacts. This episode is hosted by Sam Elwell and Jocelyn Jackson. I'm Sam.
And I'm Jocelyn. We will be going over current investments in federal clean energy, President Joe Biden's recent visit to Somerset, Massachusetts, and the history of Brayton Point, where his speech was delivered.
I come here today with a message. As president, I have a responsibility to act with urgency and resolve when our nation faces clear and present danger. And that's what climate change is about. It is literally, not figuratively, a clear and present danger. The health of our citizens and our communities is literally at stake.
President Biden came to Somerset in July to announce an investment of $2.3 billion towards clean energy production and weatherizing of private residences for energy conservation. The Brayton Point area will be used to manufacture deep-sea cables carrying large amounts of clean energy from offshore wind farms, providing enough electricity for hundreds of thousands of homeowners.
As president, I'll use my executive powers to combat the climate crisis in the absence of congressional action, notwithstanding their incredible action.
This announcement comes following an effort to provide new jobs in clean energy in place of previous jobs related to fossil fuel production and processing. Part of the Biden plan is to create jobs in sustainable energy for both young and old skilled trades workers to achieve a federal net zero carbon emissions by 2050.
Part of the drawback to this plan is the cost of investment in sustainable projects, which not all taxpayers support or believe in.
Individuals with vastly different political perspectives and backgrounds gathered to listen to the president's speech. Our team of journalists had the opportunity to interview some of these people who varied from climate activists to climate change doubters, and each person we talked to had unique thoughts about the president's visit.
We're hoping for more renewable energies. It's so important that we make some changes to help the climate. We are all trying to do our part. Just from my own family, we reuse water bottles, reuse reusable bags. We try to bike and walk and try to make a lot of green choices. But as a community, we need to come together and start doing more for the planet.
I think it's a very important issue to talk about. It's not something that just affects Somerset, not something that just affects Massachusetts, the United States, North America. It affects the world on a global level. Whether you believe in it or not, it's happening and it's affecting each and every one of us on all scales. Human, animal, environment, just in general.
Everything's connected. This is not a political issue. It's real. It's supported by facts. It's happening now. You can see it over in England where it's over 100 degrees and their roads are melting and all their trees are on fire. And this is not like a random coincidence. This is people, scientists have been telling us for many, many years that we are heading for extinction. We have to act now to protect the future because it takes a while for things to actually happen, which is why we need to act with urgency at this very moment. We need Biden to declare climate emergency right now so we can at least get the ball rolling.
I hope it leaves an impactful message that he too stands with climate change, that he too sees what's happening. And I definitely think it's a way to start to getting the ball rolling, like she said.
I'm with Extinction Rebellion Boston. It's part of a global, it started in the UK. It's part of a global movement just to get people out and to tell the truth, to act now, to start a citizens assembly, to get people able to actually make impacts and to hopefully have a just transition to include all people, all natives, all people of color, every community. This affects everyone. It doesn't matter whether you believe in it or not. It doesn't matter what your politics are. This is affecting everyone right now and will continue to get worse and worse and worse if we do not do what we need to at this very moment.
Climate change for me personally, since I've lived in multiple areas in my lifetime, I lived in New York, I lived in Boston, New Revere, Lynn, and this is my first time ever being in Somerset. I could tell in all those areas, there is an effect with climate change and pollution, I would say. In New York especially, where I used to live in Yonkers, there was always rubbish. There was always, I would say, just too much gas usage and everything. And I feel like what Biden is doing today and trying to implement windmills is honestly would be very beneficial for us in the upcoming years, I would say. I feel like what Biden is doing today is a good change, and I hope this could be a snowball effect where he can have this thing become a bigger project instead of just over in Massachusetts. It could be around New York, Vermont, just like the East Coast, West Coast, just the whole United States, I would say.
I think it's a hoax. I think it's another. We had the COVID scare, and we've had the killer bees, and we've had many other hoaxes. And this one's been going on a really long time. And I feel it's a money laundering scheme. I mean, it's been getting hot. It's been hot. It's always hot. It's hot in the summer and it's cold in the winter. And our environment does change, but everything is dying, including us.
I know there's been a lot of complaints about the metal and polluting the water and all that. So it'd be nice to have something useful and positive for our area. I think that there's a lot of really exciting new opportunities going on everywhere, not just wind, but solar. I mean, there's just a wealth of energy and new ways to get it. And so the more we look into it and determine what's best for us in this area, it would be making the least impact on our environment. The better. There's so many different combinations of different ways to do that.
This brings us to our final topic, Brayton Point.
Let me tell you why we're here at Brayton Point. 5 years ago, this towering power plant that once stood with cooling towers 500 feet high closed down. The coal plant at Brayton Point was the largest of its kind in New England. 1,500 megawatts of power. Enough to power 1 in 5 Massachusetts homes and businesses. For over 50 years, this plant supported this region's economy through the electricity they supplied, the good jobs they provided, and the local taxes they paid. But the plant, like many others around the country, had another legacy, one of toxins, smog, greenhouse gas emissions, the kind of pollution that contributed to the climate emergency we now face today.
This brief history of property from the president leaves out one very important detail. Once the cooling towers were demolished, there was a promise for Brayton Point to become a hub for offshore wind that never came to fruition. Soon after the project stalled, the space was leased out to scrap metal companies to transport scrap waste overseas.
This sudden change in plans had a huge negative impact on the surrounding community as residents dealt with elevated noise and dust pollution, which contaminated the air with fugitive dust and caused an overall disturbance in the neighborhood, as well as respiratory health issues. Without a say in the ongoing work at the site, residents were forced to deal with the repercussions of a failed promise on sustainable energy. Here's Director of Environmental Health and Safety at Roger Williams University, Kathy Souza, talking about the fight that she and the Brayton Point neighborhood put up to drive out the scrap metal operation. Welcome, Kathy. How are you?
Good. How are you? It's good to see everybody again.
Yeah, it's good to see you. So Brayton Point has had a fairly troubled history, to say the least, within the past few years. Could you just give us a little overview of that ever since the coal plant was shut down and the towers came down?
Sure. So coal-fired plant closed down in 2017. Company called Commercial Development Corporation purchased the property, came in with the premise that they were going to clean the property and prepare it for wind energy. Towers came down. We were all excited, looking forward to clean energy. And, we knew what was with wind energy. We knew it wasn't going to be the windmills, but manufacturing laydown areas. And that's not what happened. The company started cleaning the property. I was out one day, noticed that a truck driver was cleaning up scrap metal in the middle of the road, so I stopped to help him out and asked if he was taking scrap metal out or bringing it in, because we had noticed piles just growing larger than what would be with demolition. And he told me that there was a scrap metal operation that had started. It's Eastern Metals, it was EMR, so Eastern Metal Recycling, which is a subsidiary of European Metal Recycling. In conjunction with Carver Industries out of New York, Patriot Stevedoring, which was the stevedoring company, and that they would be shipping scrap metal from the neighborhood. And there were no permits for it. They never went before the town. They just came in and operated, and Selectman at the time was quoted in the local newspaper saying they were given a verbal agreement.
How did the initial reactions start up, and when did you start trying to kind of fight against the operation that was going on and get it shut down?
So we started as a neighborhood, effectively. So August was probably the end of July. They started, we noticed they were bringing in scrap metal, and the neighborhood started talking. August, they made an announcement that, you know, it was in kind of on a verbal agreement. I want to say, to me, in my mind, I think it was September, really, that we started organizing. We started a neighborhood, what we thought would be a neighborhood Facebook group at the time, which grew to over 4,000 people on the site. And that was 2019, October 2019, that we really started showing up in force to selectmen's meetings, zoning board meetings, conservation meetings, to find out how something like this could happen on the edge of the bay in our town.
What was it like starting Save Our Bay, and how did it come about, and what success have you had so far with it?
So starting, I mean, we went in it blindly. We knew we had a hurry. We knew we were in a race against time with them going for their permitting. It grew way faster than I thought. I was not up to date on social media, as, you know, I use Facebook mostly, like, you know, a woman my age would, keeping track of your children and family and pictures. And so we had, I mean, I say this now because it's the end. What I didn't know at the time is we had the perfect team in place. So we had a woman named Rachel Smith, who was excellent with social media. We had pretty much everybody on board, but we were really working 24/7. So I have a full-time job here at Roger Williams. We'd start at 5 a.m. So documenting was a huge part of this, what we brought to the lawsuit. I mean, we'd go out at 5 in the morning. We'd kayak out there. We'd take videos. We'd take drone footage. And then at the end of the day, that's when we'd start writing letters, start writing emails. So we'd be up researching. We'd all be on the phone together probably until midnight. And they were probably, I mean, if I had to say, like, key people, there were probably 12 to 15 to 20 of us that were really, like, we tried to divvy up what our specialties were, so that we could all work on, you know, and we were being inundated with people who wanted to help. So trying to sort through, okay, this is a real expert in this, they can help us here, and trying to sort through the quickest way possible to get our information together and research other groups in the country that had been successful. So that, I think, from October to maybe January or February was a really tough fight till February of 2020 when they did finally get permitting. At the time, I mean, we didn't, zoning board in the town of Somerset did an excellent job. They knew they had to allow them permits to set conditions so that we could now go after the conditions and say, look, they're violating the conditions. And that, I mean, that helped us tremendously. Our zoning board is hands down one of the best boards in town.
What kind of violations did they?
So the violations, I mean, the conditions set by the zoning board mirrored Mass DEP's and EPA's, you know, dust standards and noise standards. And, you know, no dust could leave the property. It's an industrial site. You're not allowed to pollute a residential neighborhood. So one of the cease and desist that I won is I took my kayak out with, and it sounds funny now, but at the time, I mean, we went out at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning. We kayaked out. There was a ship loading. We waited till the sun came up. We were positioned between the dock and the ship, and we videotaped every time the claw would go from the scrap metal pile over to the ship. There was no catch underneath, and the scrap metal, we counted like 15 to 20 pieces on every claw. Every 5 minutes would fall into the bay. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, that much scrap metal is falling into the bay every 5 minutes for a week straight, 24/7. So that was significant. The dust, and we could videotape the dust literally just blowing as it was moving. So that was my video that I had sent in that the building inspector denied. He said he couldn't see it. I appealed to the zoning board. The zoning board approved it. My neighbor, Nancy Thomas, hers was dust leaving the property. She just got great videos of the dust that same day, blowing off the property. And trucks had to be covered coming in and leaving the property because scrap metal would bounce out of the back of the truck, and the dust from the scrap that was in the bottom would literally blow as they were driving through residential neighborhoods. So she did the same thing. Building inspector said he didn't see it. Zoning board agreed with her. There's your second cease and desist. With a cease and desist in the state of Massachusetts, you can get personally sued, named as a defendant. So the company decided to name Nancy and I as defendants in a land court suit appealing the zoning board's decision. So the zoning board received the lawsuit, as did we, which I was just stunned when I ever got the packet. It turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to us. I mean, when I saw that, I was like, how could this happen? You worry about your house, you worry about, you know, you're literally getting named as a defendant in a state land court case. They did get the cease and desist in December of that year. It was my birthday. The building inspector decided that he was going to lift the cease and desist. Well, under Massachusetts law, he did not have permission to lift that. So here we go again. Now, I filed an appeal. Nancy Thomas filed an appeal that he did not have the right to lift the cease and desist. Only the zoning board did. In addition, an attorney who lived behind us, she filed the same appeal, which was a godsend. I mean, she's not an attorney for land court, but she was an attorney by trade. But as a citizen filed an appeal, all three of us won our appeal. We knew what was coming next, right? So here comes the third of the lawsuit. So I was named as a defendant twice. Nancy's named twice. Nicole's named once. The zoning board is named three times. We're all in a land court suit. We come before the judge, and this is over a course of almost 2 years. And the judge determines that he's going to lump the first two suits together. So that puts me, Nancy, and Nicole all in the same with the zoning board. We're pro se defendants, meaning we don't have an attorney. And then from there, it was go 24/7, compiling witnesses, compiling witnesses with their photographs, with their evidence, and onto land court.
Could you describe more about the community effort that it took with just like the entire process and the resources that you had to get? You said that you guys were kayaking. Obviously, yeah. You had to mention drones.
We did. So then it was like an education on our part. We had one drone operator who was served with a letter for an attorney. He was a licensed drone operator. You can operate a drone for recreational use. He wasn't going over there surveilling, but if he happened to be over the water and he could see something from, we're only 700 feet away from the company. So the drone footage is allowed because he's a recreational drone operator. So we were allowed to use that. And what we did was we used the Save Our Bay Brayton Point site as a means to document everything. So we started files on there. So people would send us their photos and videos, and they just posted them online. So not necessarily we weren't asking for anything. People were just providing us. And then from the neighborhood, we would, you know, people were keeping their own files of what they wanted to document for their own, like, this is what's going on in my neighborhood. So we really didn't solicit anything. It was just what the neighborhood saw and videotaped and photographed. And then financially, I mean, we have a woman who made jewelry to sell to, you know, give us donations. They were fundraisers. And there was so much help. It was almost overwhelming at some points, like how to sort through all the help that we had and all the advice that we had. Even when the company did, it's called a document dump, they sent us over 5,000 documents to sort through, thinking we'd never get through them all. We divided all those up to find the documents that were pertinent to our case. Swansea, we have a neighborhood in Swansea that was on the other side. They dug in however they could help on their end. We were getting help from Fall River. They were videotaping. Actually, the best footage we have is from Fall River across the bay. I mean, they were watching real time the dust blowing over our neighborhood, and some of the most horrifying evidence is from Fall River. So we had a lot of community support.
Back in July, a few of us from Communities of Hope went down to Brayton Point when President Biden came to visit. And we'll get into some more questions about that later. But we talked to a few people that were from Somerset, not necessarily Brayton Point, but just Somerset and Fall River as well. And they didn't even know what was going on down at Brayton Point. Was there like an issue getting the word out?
It's so shocking to me. So on my end of it, you see like the Save Our Bay Brayton Point Facebook, and yeah, it was, you go into meetings and people wouldn't even realize. So we won huge in court. We had no idea where we stood. We had no idea if we were going to lose horribly or if we were going to win huge. And we won really, you know, on all counts in March, but people didn't realize there's another land court case coming up in August. People didn't realize how many times this company was actually suing the town. So yeah, they said, you know, there was a rumor out there, oh, this was temporary. It wasn't temporary. They're suing us in court to be a commodities port. That was their true dream for the property. And even Steve Collins, who's a spokesperson for CDC, said when it became wind energy, well, our plans changed. Well, your plans changed from what? From wanting a commodities port to knowing you're not going to have it, to now wind energy. So their original plan to me, in my opinion, I've learned to use that a lot, is they wanted a commodities block. So I'm pleased. And I mean, wind energy, yes, people still don't understand. Wind energy does not mean we're getting the windmills on that property. The portion that we're getting, in theory, Prysmian has still not purchased the property, but it's going to be cable making. So that comes with another 600-foot tower, another tower that's almost 200 feet. So we're going to be building towers right back over on the property again. It's not like the dream pretty wind picture. You know, it's clean energy, but we're saying right now, the ships that come in, if we're truly going to do clean energy, it should be ship-to-shore power. Why are we going to have diesel ships putting out diesel fumes into the neighborhood? If we're really going clean, let's do ship-to-shore power. So that's going to be, you know, the community's request right now. I don't go to the community meetings because I'm on the zoning board, and they could be possibly coming before me, so I'm separating myself right now from any meetings, anything like that.
Do you have any thoughts on what President Biden said when he came down? Anything like that?
That was one of these, there's no way President Biden's coming down to Brayton Point. I was super excited. I mean, to have a sitting president, no matter what your political views are, a sitting president is coming to your town, to your neighborhood. So I found that to be very exciting. I think he stopped short of declaring it an energy crisis. That to me was surprising. I thought that's why he was coming down. And I mean, so there's still a little bit of handcuffs on everybody if you didn't declare it an energy crisis, right? So, I mean, we're still kind of in the same place. I just couldn't help staring at the fact that he was standing around, scrap metal was around the base of his feet. We'll have to see. I always watch the political climate because there's a huge amount of money behind wind energy right now. And then, you know, 2 years from now, does that change if we have a change in political climate? So I'm as new to this as anybody for watching the political side of it. I was always involved in watching politics in my hometown, but as far as watching it nationally and globally, I've really started educating myself on it.
As far as you know at the moment, do you think Brayton Point will eventually become a wind turbine plant in the near future as it was promised?
I don't. I think it will become a cable making manufacturer. Do I think that there'll be lay down? I know there's talk of it. Right now, everything is off the table for Commercial Development Corporation. They haven't said anything since there's been no commodities part. That was August 25th, I believe, the case was dismissed. So we're not even a month out from that. So the only thing that I know is moving forward is Mayflower Wind is planning on doing the connect. So that's literally like taking a cable and plugging it into the grid that's outside our home. So that's probably a 5-acre footprint of 300. The cable making company will be 48 acres of that 300. So here we have, and we're still in the mess of, the state has acknowledged they own the dock. They own 12.5 acres right on that area. So I'm still hoping that the state comes, and right now's the time to say, look, we own the dock. We're going to give it to the Clean Energy Center, and we're going to have them oversee the dock. So something like this can never happen again. And everywhere else in the state manages their docks that they own, and they own this dock, and they own this land, and they need to come take it over.
Yeah, I think that's most of like the big questions we had. Is there anything else you'd like to bring up? Anything else you'd like to add to the story?
No, I get a lot of questions about would I do it over again. I would. I absolutely would. And we're trying to help. Now that we have a good handle on what's going on and how these companies come in and how they try and overtake your town, I mean, we're trying to help other towns. We're trying to help Freetown right now. They have they actually have a shredder in their town right abutting a neighborhood, so we'd like to help them out as much as we can. There's some, they say their companies are water dependent and not necessarily water dependent. And then, I'm refraining from even some of the wind energy, right? Not all the wind energy is water-dependent manufacturing. I mean, there's a lot of good to come out of the wind energy, a lot of good. But there's also a lot of, you know, these companies are making a huge amount of money. They're getting a lot of tax breaks. I mean, they have to bend a little. And if we're going to be clean energy, I just beg of these companies, be clean energy from the very smallest item to the largest item. So that is my hope, that we're not, you know, on face value looking and saying, you know, well, you know, it's great, it's wind energy, and then you find out not on, you know, 50% of it's actually clean energy.
Thank you for taking time to talk to us.
Oh, I love it.
Just about BrainPoint in general. It's a pretty interesting story, really.
It is. It's kind of a one of a kind. I'm happy the way it ended. Well, almost ended. We're waiting on the Attorney General's office to finish their investigation. So for that, for the Attorney General's office to come out with their final conclusion on their intent to sue, I think that'll be closure for us on this chapter of it, and then we can go forward with what's coming next.
There are a lot of opinions about the future of Brighton Point. Save Our Bay has made several attempts to push for cleaning the surrounding neighborhood and coastal area, yet Kathy Souza has doubts about turning the previous plant into a sustainable energy source.
It will be interesting to see the impact Biden's renewable energy plan will have on not only Mount Hope Bay, but coastal areas around the country. Residents remain hopeful towards the shift to sustainable resources, ready to take action if any plans fall through.
EcoTalk is a co-production of EcoRI News and Communities of Hope. This is Sam Elwell.
And this is Jocelyn Jackson. Listen for us on your favorite streaming service. See you next month.
EcoTalk is hosted by Jocelyn Jackson and Sam Elwell. Our at-large editor is Bonnie Phillips, and our executive producer is Bernardo Mata. Our reporting, production, and editing team includes Sam Elwell, Jocelyn Jackson, Kaylee Pugliese, Will Nichols, Jack Avilas, and Emily Rosen.
The music was made by Shannon Browley. Special thanks to our guests, including Kathy Souza, the Director of Environmental Health and Safety at Roger Williams University, and the local activists who are present at Brighton Point trying to make a difference in their community.